Capital Market Insights from ICMA.
Good day to all of you and welcome to today's podcast. My name is Martin Shack and I am the Chief Executive of the International Capital Market Association. As you may have seen, we've been publishing for the last year a series of podcasts on a very wide range of topics of relevance to our members in the capital markets. These have discussed specific capital market products and many different aspects of the four core debt securities markets areas on which we focus, and those are the primary markets, the secondary markets, the repo and collateral markets, and of course the sustainable bond markets. Some of the podcasts have also been dedicated to issues relevant to our two outreach groups, and those are the ICMA Future Leaders Group and the ICMA Women's Network. Now, as we move into 2021, we thought it would be helpful to hear from leading economists at major member firms how they see 2021 developing, to hear their views on the drivers of economic and market developments. And I think we can all agree that it's particularly challenging to navigate in today's capital markets and make the best financial decisions, given the socioeconomic impact of the pandemic and the plethora of monetary and fiscal measures enacted by governments around the world to mitigate the problems and return their economies to growth. At the same time, there are other factors having an influence: armed conflicts, rising inequality and social change, a difficult transition to a new administration in the US, trade tensions, supply chain disruptions, a glut of debt in both the official and private sectors, Brexit, commodity prices, etc. It's really a confusing picture. So I'm delighted to welcome today Paul Donovan, who will be sharing his views and making sense of this for us. Now, Paul is the Global Chief Economist for UBS Wealth Management and a member of the UBS Wealth Management Global Investment Committee. And as well as being a leading economist, he's an acclaimed author, having written two books on environmental economics, authored the book The Truth About Inflation, and published extensive research on the economic impacts of prejudice in society. And this latter theme is further developed in his latest book, entitled Profit and Prejudice, The Luddites of the Fourth Industrial Revolution, just published in 2020. So as you can see, we're in very good hands. And Paul, thank you very much for coming along today. We're really looking forward to hearing your comments. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Martin. And good day to everybody. So I'd like to start by saying that I think we do have a bit of a problem with terminology at the moment, that in the media there's lots of discussion about the recession and is there going to be a double dip recession and so on. And I really think this is very unhelpful in terms of the language that's being used. Recession is a media word. It's not got a formal definition in economics, but we all sort of know what a recession is. It's you get a series of imbalances in the economy. Those imbalances cause an economic slowdown. You get a policy response to address the imbalances, and you get a gradual recovery back. That's not what happened in 2020. Essentially, and at the risk of oversimplifying a little, I would say that the global economy split into two camps in 2020. With the pandemic, one part of the economy basically went on an extended grand vacances. Production shut down, production reopened. And it was like flipping a light switch. And that, of course, is not how we normally behave in a period of economic slowdown and recovery. It's normally more gradual than that. It takes time to get back to normal. But if you look at the manufacturing sector, consumer durable goods, for example, I mean, this sort of binary off then on process is very, very evident. And in fact, things like furniture sales in Europe and the States are way above where they were prior to the pandemic. But then alongside that, we had a second swathe of companies which didn't have a recession. They got a structural blow, where their business model is being torn up, where you are seeing accelerated structural change coming through, the changes of the fourth industrial revolution. And again, talking about this group of companies being in a recession is not very useful in terms of language, because when we think of recessions, we think about a recovery back to normal. Well, there is no recovery back to normal for these companies. If you are, you know, a mediocre high street retail chain, there isn't a future for you. You know, we've gone online and we're not going back. And so that, I think, creates, again, a problem with this use around the word recession, because as we go into the recovery phase, the recovery is not going to be a recovery from a recession. For some parts of the economy, the recovery has already happened, and for some parts of the economy, the recovery isn't going to be happening. So that, I think, is an important distinction to bear in mind. Two other general points I would make before going in to consider the economic outlook. The first is that I think we should remember that the virus itself does very little economic damage. It's not the virus that's the problem, it's fear of the virus that does the damage, whether that's fear amongst consumers or businesses or fear creating a certain policy response. And that is significant when we think about the different paths that, say, the US and the European economies are on at the moment. And the second thing is, I think that we do always tend to underestimate the ability of humans to adapt in the face of adversity. We saw this in 2020 when there was excessive pessimism about how quickly a recovery could occur. And I think we're still seeing this now, where there is a failure to recognize, perhaps, that people will adjust accordingly. And this is, of course, lessening the economic impact of the current situation in Europe, where we are seeing more restrictions. So taking these two things together, I think that this creates a divergence in the economic experience of Europe and the United States in the early part of 2021. In the United States, fear of the virus, at least officially, is less than it is in Europe. We're not seeing the same degree of restrictions that we are seeing in continental Europe or the United Kingdom. And as a result, the economic damage that comes from those restrictions is proportionately less. That means that the US consumer, I think, will continue to be a very forceful support for the economy in the first half of this year, aided, of course, by fiscal measures. The fiscal package that was passed at the end of 2020 was in many ways largely an antidepressant rather than a stimulant. It was primarily aimed at stopping things from getting worse, but there was stimulus in there in the $600 checks that were very rapidly mailed out to US consumers. And I suppose also in the fact that by improving unemployment benefit, you have reduced the risk of precautionary savings, and that too may therefore act as an additional stimulus. So in the United States, we have a clear support from the consumer over the first half of the year. But of course, in Europe and the UK, that is not going to be the case, where fear of the virus has led to either extended restrictions or stricter restrictions being imposed. And we are back in a situation where consumers are essentially being forced to save because they are simply not able to go out and spend money. That process, therefore, subdues consumption, but as I said, we must remember that people adapt, and so we will see less of an impact coming through because people have adapted to life under these restrictions. So to use a personal example, I can remember having some tense conversations with my mother back in March, explaining how to order her groceries online. And she was saying, oh, I'll go to the shop. I was saying, you can't go to the shop. This is what you've got to do. And it took a while. Now, of course, my mother is ringing me up every week with the list of the latest price discounts she's found on the internet, my mother being a big fan of price discounts. So you see that people adapt, and you're seeing this in online retail sales, the adaption to home working, changing transport methods, all of this sort of thing is coming through. So that does lessen the impact, but we can't deny that Europe and the UK will have an impact. And that will probably last into the second quarter, though I would imagine that in late second quarter we will see some revival. So we've got different patterns of consumption coming through, both in the US and in Europe. That will create some differences in terms of the tenor of growth. I think it is very unlikely that we will be seeing significant investment spending coming through. Clearly, investment spending is going to be positive relative to last year. It could hardly be negative. But I think there are two forces which are going to restrain investment spending. The first of these is simply that as people are working from home, and as this perhaps becomes more of a model, you don't need to spend on investment. If I'm working from home, I'm providing the real estate, I'm providing the office equipment, I'm providing the computer equipment, I'm providing the internet connection. You know, I am basically subsidizing my employer's shareholders because it is my consumer spending and my historic consumer spending that is providing the capital equipment necessary to do my job. So I think we see a greater efficiency in the use of an economy's capital stock, as you don't have a home office and a work office, you just have the one place of work. So that does suggest a reduction in investment, not just now, but actually something structurally that could last for a number of years. So the second issue with investment is that, of course, we're accelerating the structural changes of the fourth industrial revolution. And that means many businesses are going to be questioning their business model. What is the rational approach? Do you want to localize your supply chains or diversify your supply chains or just carry on as normal? Do you want to move more of your retail online, or are you going to stick to bricks and mortar? Are you going to have offices in the future, or are you going to have your entire staff working from home, and so on? Now, these decisions clearly are not going to be taken overnight. It's going to take some time to decide how you want to reallocate your resources. And during that period, it seems to me relatively unlikely that we will see an aggressive investment story. So investment, I don't think, is going to be a major contribution to economic growth. It will be positive, but it's not going to be playing the role that the consumer is going to be playing. The second half of this year, I think, probably sees a shift in the pattern of global consumption. And this is something which I think will matter quite a lot to global trade. So what we have seen during the pandemic is essentially that consumer spending has been forced, essentially, to shift away from services and towards consumer durable goods. You can't go out and have a restaurant meal. You are taking fewer holidays. People are driving less, et cetera, et cetera. Spending on services has gone down. And the additional income that has been saved has then been spent on consumer durable goods, which is perhaps somewhat inevitable, that if people have been sitting at home, staring at their furniture in lockdown for 3 months, whilst watching Netflix home renovation programs, perhaps inevitably they're going to want to go out and redecorate as soon as lockdown starts to lift. However, if we think about the process when the vaccines have been sufficiently well rolled out, that fear of the virus has diminished considerably, at that point, I think people are going to want to have fun. And having fun is not about buying a new washing machine. You don't post Instagram photos of your new washing machine. You post Instagram photographs of going out and having a meal, of going on holiday with friends or whatever. So I think we will see in sort of a roaring 20s style scenario that once the vaccine is sufficiently widely distributed, there will be a shift away from manufactured product and towards services. Now, that is going to have an implication for Asia. If you look at what has happened with China, China has benefited enormously from this services to manufacturing shift because, of course, China is the largest manufacturing economy in the world. China's growth has not been domestic led. aside from some rather dubious infrastructure and real estate spending, it's been an export-supported recovery. That cannot be relied upon, I think, in the second half of this year, because I think that shift in consumption from services to manufacturing is then going to shift back the other way. And that will lead to a more subdued trading environment. I don't think we're going to get sudden changes in global supply chains simply because these things take time to implement. If we look at the impact of President Trump's taxes on trade, there was only a limited number of goods where you could see a very swift reaction to the taxes. For most, the supply chains took a couple of years to shift. So I don't think we're going to be seeing immediate shifts in supply chains, but that too will be something that gradually emerges over time. So taking all of this together, I think that central banks will be content to reiterate a very low interest rate policy for the forecastable future, although inflation is likely to move a little bit higher this year. With the amount of spare capacity we still have in the global economy, it seems to me very unlikely that we will be in a high inflation environment. Although, of course, there'll be some temporary blips caused by base effects in the oil market and so on and so forth. Where I think there is more interest in central bank policy is what is going to happen with regards to quantitative policy. Because here I think central banks will be setting their liquidity injections in accordance with liquidity demand. And as we see the recovery gradually picking up momentum as the consumer returns to normal, liquidity demand is likely to decline somewhat. And I think at that point, central banks will at least begin a debate about how best to scale back the liquidity injections that are currently taking place. Today's liquidity injections have already been scaled back relative to the peak of perhaps 6 months ago. So we shouldn't be too surprised to see this policy continuing. So overall, I would say this is a fairly strong year for economic activity led by the consumer. The divergence between Europe and the United States at the start of this year is simply a function of different policy reactions on either side of the Atlantic. Over time, the European consumer will come back, and I think will come back forcefully. We are looking at a situation where I think people are going to continue to adapt in the face of adversity and will be able to support the economic recovery. And for much of the economy in Europe, there will be a fairly abrupt recovery as restrictions are limited. The process of structural change is going to be a challenge, but this is a challenge for the next decade or more. And something we have to be very much aware of. But to treat a structural challenge with cyclical policy is not helpful. This requires a longer-term strategy around improving flexibility within the labor market and helping people navigate the process of change. I think we remain in a broadly low inflation environment, though inflation is a little bit higher this year than in 2020. And central bank policy on interest rates can therefore remain unchanged. But the quantitative policy, I think, is certainly an area of more animated discussion as we go through this year.
Thank you very much, Paul. That's been a really excellent recap of your views as to where we stand at the moment and where we're going to be with regard to central bank policy, with regard to rates, with regard to inflation. Very interesting points coming through in terms of the structural changes and those unlikely to have a return to the status quo and the pandemic merely accelerating those structural changes, and your comments about the fear of the virus being the key driver and driving consumer spending patterns. That's also a very interesting takeaway from this this short speech. So I'd like to thank you very, very much indeed for coming to share your views with us at ICMA. It's Martin Shek speaking with Paul Donovan, Global Chief Economist for UBS Wealth Management. Thank you very much, Paul.
Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you for listening. For more ICMA podcasts and further information on capital markets, please visit our website, icmagroup.org.